Welcome to Trapping Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear, on a nice drizzly day down here in the South. It's, I'd say there's still some of you guys out there trapping, maybe way up north. You still got some spring beaver and maybe muskrats. But for the most of us, it's time to go fishing or it's time to go turkey hunting. So that's just the way it is. But I want to talk today more about coyotes. Because I don't know if it's just as I get older, but man, time flies. It's going to be season again, it seems like, in about 2.5 weeks, even though I know it's not. But that's just the way the time moves as you get older. It's really wild. So I want to finish what I was talking about with the coyotes, hammering the coyotes. And today we're going to get into the location part of this, which I think personally is the biggest difference in my own trapping career or system or whatever you want to call it, that has made the biggest difference for me to be able to catch more coyotes off a smaller area. So hopefully you get something out of today's show. Before we get to that though, I want to thank our sponsors. We have the best sponsors, honest sponsors, guys that get your stuff out to you, guys you don't have to worry about your money, guys it's not going to hold your money, guys it's just going to do what they say they're going to do and get your stuff out to you. And one is F&T Fur Harvesters, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. And they do. They have everything you need for trapping if you're into hunting hounds or you're into predator calls. They have all kinds of stuff. You can go to their website, which we have a link below. Check it out. You place your order. And most days, those orders will be shipped out that day, unless it's like, you know, within 2 or 3 weeks of Christmas when things get insane. But you'll see how quick their shipping is. You'll see how good the prices are. And you'll see how happy you are as a customer. Next sponsors, Okie Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma. Jeb is just one of them good old guys that you need to know. He's always got some cool stuff on hand. He's always got his hands in a lot of different pots that can make your life easier as a trapper. Full line of trapping supply stuff, snaring stuff, bait making stuff. Buys fur some years. Just a really good guy that's got a really good business that takes care of trappers. And that's Okie Cable and Trap. Then we have Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Alan up there does a bang-up job with his business. You get the order in, he gets the product out. He does everything he can to keep everything in stock. It gets a little squirrely this time of year as far as getting stuff in to make. But you'll see how quick their turnaround is. You'll see what their prices are, and you'll see they will take care of you. They will go out of their way to take care of you as a customer. And that's Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Then we got Dunlap Lures. The death dealer himself, Jeff Dunlap, makes lures. Him and Sarah get in their shop. They seem to perform some black magic, a little bit of voodoo, throw some sprinkle of some moon dust in there, and they make amazing products for trappers. If I was not using my own products, I would be using Jeff's. I've been with him in his shop. I've seen what he does, and it is top quality. Not only the way he makes it and what he put in it, but the results that people get when they use it. So Dunlap Lures, you don't have anything to worry about if you order lures from him. Now, before we get started, I want to have just a little bit of conspiracy talk. Guys, we live in a clown world that's run by some sadistic clowns. A lot of them, when you talk about them and you talk about how much money they have, they use the word B in front of their words because most of them are billionaires. They happen to own computer companies and different things like that. Or in the finance, or the really big government agencies where they're making millions upon millions of dollars from kickbacks from pharmaceutical companies, which is actually how most like the CDC and the NIH gets paid. And as we remember, because it's not as hot as a topic right now, you know, just about a year and a half ago, half of America thought it was totally fine to let people that didn't have a vaccine not go to the doctor and die of something else. Polls showed half of America thought that was totally fine. You should not even let them in the hospital. You shouldn't let them go to work. You shouldn't let them get out of their house. They should be a prisoner. They should die lonely and miserable and just get out of the way of society because they're a curse to society. And so, and I was one of those people that did not take the vaccine. Everybody took or didn't take the vaccine for a myriad of reasons, and I hold no judgment on that whatsoever. I looked at it. I didn't think it was a very good idea for me. My wife took it. My dad took it. Almost everyone, I think every one of the neighbors and friends that I know have taken it. But I didn't take it. And I had several reasons for that, which I could articulate. And I just decided not to take it. So see, I had a choice to take what I consider an experimental dangerous drug or not. Now, someone that just looks at it and goes, well, this was just a vaccine like the chicken pox. They didn't do very much research, but if they chose that route, that's totally fine. They went down and they got the shot. See, you had the choice to get the shot or you had the choice not to get the shot. What I'm getting ready to play you, let me get my, make sure my Bluetooth's off so you'll be able to hear this. What I'm getting ready to play you is not something from a content creator that makes stuff up. This is actually a proud company explaining what their process is to put vaccines into plants that we eat. And what they're doing now is with lettuce. I want you to let that sink in. I'm going to play this, but I want you to think about that. The people that are sadistic in this world that think they get to tell everybody else what to do, they're now figuring out ways to give people medicines that may or may not be healthy, may or may not be tested, and may or may have really bad results for a lot of people with completely them not knowing about it. Because I guarantee you, when you go to a restaurant and you get a salad and it's got lettuce on there, it's not going to say on the menu, this lettuce contains vaccine A, B, and C. So I want to just play this. And this is coming from ABC, a local channel. And it's not like this is a catch you story. This is a story where the company that's putting vaccines into plants is proud of what they're doing without thinking about the consequences of what they're doing. Because if you put a vaccine in there, you can put anything, any drug that a drug company wants to do, or anything that a mad scientist wants to do, or anything that the government wants to do, and now you're a guinea pig for somebody and you don't even know it.
Medicago's manufacturing facility looks like a nursery, but inside these plants, they're growing a new kind of vaccine. The technology is called a virus-like particle.
At Medicago, we use a careful step-by-step process to develop vaccines, using our plants as mini bioreactors. We start with the gene sequence, or code, of a virus. We then use our technology to synthesize the virus code into a real biological product. The code contains genetic instructions that our plants can read, and we insert it into bacteria called Agrobacterium tumefaciens. We submerge the plants in a bath with the bacteria that carries the information into the plant cells. And using a vacuum, we suck out the air between the plant cells and replace it with the liquid. The plants absorb it like a sponge. At the end of their bacterial bath, we return our plants to a carefully controlled greenhouse to let them get on with their natural growing business for at least 4 days. Now the plants will start producing the most important ingredient of our vaccines, virus-like particles.
Medicago's manufacturing
system. Isn't that interesting? I bet you're not seeing that on CNN or Fox News. I'm not hearing Bill Gates, which is funding this, by the way, is not really bragging about it in the open. Just, I think it's just something humans need to understand, that maybe with the people that consider themselves elite and in charge, do not assume that they think that you are functioning free humans. You are there for them. Now, I don't know if they can do this into animals or not. For the way this process was, I don't think you could do that to the animal because you'd kill it. So, as this goes on, which you're not going to hear very much about, every time you take eat probably a leaf from a lettuce or kale or broccoli or spinach, you're taking a risk on being drugged with something that could have something like the mRNA where it's staying in your body even though they say that it's not. Wow. This company is proud of it. The news report was touting this as being an amazing progress. Just thought you would like to know. All right, back to the subject at hand. We were talking about coyotes, Hammer and Coyotes. I'm getting this information, which I'm reading out of Eastern Woofer, and then I'm adding commentary to this. The magic number most guys want to catch in a season, or girls, is 100. The magic number of 100 is taken almost more than it is in reality. 100 coyotes are not that hard to take in the east over a season. All that is needed is you trap on smaller 1,500 to 3,000 acres or on same amount of ground spread over a smaller amount of farms for 3 weeks. Then move to a new group of farms three times. So that's what, 3, 6, 9 weeks? Maybe 12 weeks? Most seasons are definitely longer than that. You would be right around having 100 coyotes. Some areas will be less than 100. And some will be way over 100 coyotes. Let's break down 100 coyote season with a daily average. See, I love daily averages, guys, because it puts things in perspective. It gives you context. The daily average is all that really matters in the long run. My best day trapping coyotes is 14. Since I wrote the book, it's definitely more than that. I wish I could say every day was this way, but it does not work out this way over the course of a season. And it doesn't for anybody. I'm saying that's not in the book. If I could take just half of my best day and repeat it over a season, I would catch 1,050 coyotes in a 5-month season. I wish this was the case, but sadly, I've not figured out this 7-day average yet. A 3-a-day coyote average over 5 months is 450 coyotes. 2 coyotes a day would average 300 coyotes per year. Think about the amount. Think about this a moment. 300 coyotes sounds super sexy when it rolls off the tongue. But 2 coyotes a day does not have the same ring to it. It should sound the same because it is the same exact amount of coyotes for a guy to catch his 100 coyotes in 5 months. It is 0.66 coyotes a day. So basically, I don't know how to break that down where it's like perfect, but it's like a coyote every other day for 5 months. Most people definitely have the capability to do this. That's not a coyote every day. That's a coyote every other day. That means you get your ass kicked every other day. And then you only catch one. A 4-month season means you will need to take 0.83, so that's like 3/4 of a coyote a day. 3 months equals 1.1 coyote a day. 2 months equals 1.6 coyotes a day. And 1 month is 3.3 coyotes a day. The point of this little math lesson is to show you how to work off the daily average when setting your goals. Don't leave the house in the morning at the start of the season, think 100, 200, or 300 coyotes over the season. Break down your goal to a daily average and do whatever it takes to meet this daily average. Knowing what you have to take every day makes your trapping season more enjoyable. And the reason I love averages, back when I didn't have the you know, my lure business was pretty much just a you know, maybe a, hell, $5,000 a year hobby. DVDs, no books, no that. And I was having to trap for a living, which I did for several years. The only way I could keep sane was a daily average. So when I set goals to meet what I had to have for income, I would never think about I need to catch 600 coon or 1,000 beaver or 200 coyotes or 100 cats or, you know, 300 muskrats, you know, and I would figure all this up depending on where I was at and what's going on and what the populations look like and the ability and the time and all this other stuff that's going on. And I would break those down into daily averages. This keeps you sane, guys, and it keeps you from getting so butthurt when you don't have record days every day, which nobody has, no matter what they say in articles, DVDs, or folklore. Lore, not lure, lore. Nobody does. So if you're really wanting to break 100 coyotes, and you need to, and you're going to trap for 3 months, that means you need to basically catch a coyote every day, and then once a week, you'll need to catch two coyotes. That's what that means. So when you're going out through your day and you catch a coyote, you've met your goal for that day and everything else is gravy. But if you keep it in your mind, I got to catch 100 coyotes. Okay, I've got 99 to catch. I got 98 to catch. I got 96. It seems overwhelming. It's kind of like losing weight. The worst possible thing a human being can do when they need to lose weight is go, I need to lose 100 pounds. No, 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 no. You want to go crazy? You start saying that crap. I need to lose 2 pounds a week. We can all lose 2 pounds a week. It's easy to lose 2 pounds a week. It's hard to lose 100 pounds. It's easy to catch a coyote a day if you're really hustling, but it's hard to catch 100 coyotes. That's the reason the average, to me personally, the way my brain works, makes better sense. So when I was doing this full time for a living and I would set out a goal, it would be like, I need to catch 5 raccoons, 2 beaver, 1 fox, a coyote every other day, and a bobcat every 3 days. Depending on what the fur prices were and all that type stuff, I'd have all that figured out. So when I went out to my day, it wasn't like, and I'm trapping full time, I'd be like, holy cow, I can catch 6 raccoon a day. I'm going to set where I should catch 50. And if I just catch 6, I'm good. If I catch 7, I'm ahead on the next day. See, mentally, this allows you not to get so wrapped up in the bigger number, because the bigger number, just like losing 100 pounds, is a really big deal. So that's the reason, to me personally, and I'm not saying that you have to do this, but it is definitely a way to look at this. On the days where you double or triple your daily average, you will just pad your catch for the days when you are not trapping or the days when you have no coyotes. That should make perfect sense to everybody. I know there are a lot of guys that try to make the public believe that they are such good trappers that they always slay the coyotes day in and day out. Let me think about the people that try to get that out there to everybody. bullshit. That's what I think about it. Don't fall for this hype. Every trapper that traps over a long season will come home many times without a coyote in the truck. You may want to have a 3 coyote a day average. This is not easy to do over a long period of time. If you need 3 coyotes a day, then you trap each day like you need 10 coyotes or 15 coyotes. The longer your trapping season, the more life life will try to slow you down. Over the season, you'll have to deal with floods, rain, snow, ice, hunters, truck breakdowns, family emergencies. So three coyotes a day means that you will have many hurdles to work through, and each problem will hurt your catch to some degree. Think about the averages when you're thinking about your season. Be real about the days that you're going to trap. Then break that number down. You just divide the number, you know, it's basic math, by how many days, and that'll be your daily average. Okay, now this is where I think this book, The Eastern Woofer, is so powerful once you understand what we're getting ready to cover. Why so many coyotes? Why so many coyote locations? This section is not talking about the exact locations to set a trap. It is talking about why 2 to 6 locations on most farms are not enough. My personal experience on the mountain locations comes from many areas: fur trapping, control trapping, studying woofers, learning primary and secondary locations from federal and university coyote studies. In the beginning of my coyote trapping, I would search out the most used locations from sign. Over several years of looking on the ground for tracks, kickbacks, kills, scats, picking these locations became routine. After a while, it turned into a game. I would see a good location and I would go see if the sign was present. Anyone that spends a little time looking for coyotes will come good at picking locations. The trapper will then be able to catch coyotes without the need to see sign. You will start to see patterns in terms of roads, draws, water, fences, gates, passes, road kills, fields, deer trails, and travel ways. The better I got at picking, quote, the locations, quote, the more coyotes I would catch faster. I was a long lining junkie that would cover a lot of ground over time. However, another pattern started to rear its head. I was setting and finding, quote, the location and seeing smaller, less used locations that I was not setting. These less used locations might only have a set of tracks or a pile of crap or two on them. My way of thinking was, at the time, is to set the hot locations and coyotes would show up in the traps. Everything was working like clockwork and I saw no reason to explore the smaller, less used locations. Keep in mind, I was trained in the ways of Western longliner trapping. After I was comfortable with my trap, snare became legal in the counties I was trapping. I started setting up crawl unders at fences. In the beginning, I would drive the fence line looking for hair in the fence and then slam in a snare. A lot of coyotes were caught setting this way. This is where I learned maybe we're not just as smart as we think we are. Then one day, I looked up and around as I cut the cable off an old female coyote. What was the reason for the crawl under to be so heavily used? Why? That day and the rest of the season, I became obsessed with trying to understand why the coyotes were crossing the fence where they were. A lot of times, there seemed to be no reason at all. As I spent a lot of time trying to figure out and get a grasp on why coyotes would use a section of the fence, sometimes it would become obvious. Most of the time, the travel way that the coyotes were using were not on any type of location. And I'm going to reword that. Any type of logical, rational, reasonable, understandable, comprehensible location. I was catching the coyotes, I was seeing the holes in the hair, but they did not seem to know that they should be where I had decided that they should be. This conclusion rocked my confidence on where coyotes spend their time traveling. Later that year, I was trapping on 7,000 acres of reclaimed strip land. I started the line with traps. After about a week, the weather was so bad that keeping traps working was a nightmare. It rained, it snowed, it sleeted every other day. The ground would freeze every night and then it would be a muddy mess during the day. Enough is enough. So I pulled the traps and started setting snares. On this 7,000 acres, there ended up being about 220 snares. If I even thought about a coyote might, and now let me say that again, might walk somewhere, in went at least one snare. I set the roads, the four-wheeler trails, beaver dams, high and low bank trails, game trails, side trails, and just about any opening in the draws. I forced a lot of snares in the places they really should not have been. The snare line will always be in the back of my mind. This snare line will always be in the back of my mind. A little over 50 coyotes, 15 to 20 cats fell victim to this madness of my snare line. Guys, that was 50 coyotes off 7,000 acres in Tennessee. Okay. Let's see. Besides the needed money of the fur, the snare line opened my eyes to a world of a coyote in a different light. A pattern became clear. Coyotes go where they want to, not where we think they should go. Let me repeat that. Coyotes go where they want to and not where we think they should go. Sure, they travel to hot spots, but they just as likely to be running on a not-so-storybook location. Believe it or not, more coyotes were caught on smaller locations than were taken on the trapper locations. That is what really blew my mind. Guys, when I say I set up everything, I set up everything. And the better trails did catch coyotes, but the smaller trails outnumbered the bigger trails. One, there was more of them. Two, there was more activity on them over a whole average. So what I thought were the hot locations, and at this time I was considered a professional trapper, but the coyotes weren't doing what I thought they should be doing. Sometimes the client would be on the property. Wait a minute. My control business. Crap. Believe it or not, more coyotes were caught on the smaller locations and were taken on the trapper locations. Even though I knew more coyotes were taken in the less obvious locations, I was reluctant to apply this to my footholds. This is what you call bias. Like when you talk to a liberal about gun control and you feel like you're talking to an automated machine that just has gun control imprinted on their brain, it's because their bias is about the gun and not about the person that's shooting people. It's not about the broke society. It's not about all the psychedelic drugs that 50% of the population of America is on. And 90% of the people that commit shootings in schools are on these for anxiety and depression and bipolar and all this type of stuff. It's never any of the actual human side. It's about the guns. Their bias is on the guns. See, trappers, we have biases too. Where do you put a trap? After a while, because of your experience and what you've seen and what you've done, you're going to believe in your biases because that's what you believe. And something has to hit you between the eyes like a baseball bat to get you to come off of that. Just like I have a bias that Americans should own guns and should be able to protect themselves. There's going to have to be something so radical to happen to me or this country where I would go, yeah, maybe we should give up our guns. See, my bias is pro-gun. And I will do anything to stay inside of my comfort zone of that bias. That's exactly what I was doing, even though the coyotes, I mean, I want you to think about this. Seriously, think about this. I just caught 50 coyotes and another 20 cats off of 7,000 acres in Tennessee. I knew more coyotes were caught off the smaller locations than they were the quote trapper locations. But when I went to footholds, I went right back to setting the quote trapper locations and not the smaller locations. The bias of where I put that trap was keeping me, because of my closed brain and my unwillingness to see what the animals were trying to show me, kept me from being the best trapper that I could be. As my control business started to transition from more coyotes and less beaver, the next series of lessons began. I would be hired by a client to trap exclusively on their property for a period of time. I was on 1,000 to 8,000 acres, 24 hours a day. Sometimes a client would be on the property every day or every few days. At the minimum, I would get a call every couple of days for a catch report. Most of these clients are wealthy and used to having things happen according to their schedule and their expected results. It sounded better to them at the end of 2 weeks if you would have 10 to 30 coyotes than a daily report of 0 to 6 coyotes. Plus, if I'm staying on the property away from home and time is spent on a single piece of property, it's obvious the land manager or owner. There is no way the client would be happy to pay my bill if I were only setting 10 or 2 to 10 locations on that farm. I would be done by 8 or 9 in the morning, sitting on my butt for the rest of the day. It would be hard to explain to the man who is paying me very well that you caught 2 coyotes for the day and that you're resting. My clients don't understand trapping, but they want results if they are paying you for your services. So I found myself in a situation where I needed to work on the trap line, setting and checking traps all day. This started as a way to keep the client happy and to show them that I was earning their money. When I worked on a job, I just kept setting traps, lots of traps. When I started this procedure on controlled jobs, it was more to keep the clients happy. Today, however, I keep setting traps, and it is for results. I will first set the major locations and then set up the minor locations. I basically set up my trap line just like I did for the snare line at the strip pit. The more traps I would set on the piece of ground, the more patterns I would notice with locations. The patterns match the snare line on the strip pit. As many or more coyotes were caught on what most trappers would call minor location. Trappers that trap year round, or a trapper that spends a lot of time in the woods hunting, fishing, or maybe his job has him outside, will see coyotes during the day. I've seen coyotes during the day all over the country. I'm going to notice the same pattern. Now I want you to take a minute to think about the coyotes you've seen in the field. Take another moment and see in your mind's eye where you saw the coyotes. Personally, I've never seen a coyote where I would put a set. The only thing that pops in my mind after writing this book is I was with Chip Davis down on his farm in the Delta, Mississippi, deer hunting. And we did see a coyote cross a railroad track, not at a road, not where you would set the trap. But it did end up on this little road that ended up coming to an edge where you would set a trap. So there was one time. Most of the time, it looks like the coyotes are just stuck out there, like an alien drops them from an alien ship and they're running somewhere, or they're walking somewhere, slinking somewhere. Think about the ones you've seen. I could dismiss this observation, but I have seen many coyotes from the truck, and not one have matched what I've been taught where coyotes should be in reference to major locations. So a question is the quote hot spot or quote hot location more important to hammering the coyotes than the minor locations? If as many coyotes are caught in minor locations, are they really minor locations? The shift that needs to be on your mind is a pattern that happens between major and minor locations. The major locations are the crossroads, pond dikes, long running edges, gaps, passes, outstanding feature, water edges, gates, logging roads, etc. These are the locations that are shown in most books and videos. All major locations should and need to be set up. Now, after one to several coyotes are caught on these locations, a lot of coyotes will bypass these locations. If you're somewhere where you've got snow or a lot of mud, start walking away from those locations till you find tracks and watch what happens. Most standard locations are good because they top major passageways that coyotes use often. Once the residents see several, or maybe just one family member swinging on the end of a chain, a lot of coyotes will skirt the major location. The major location is hot is because the coyotes are using the location to get from somewhere to somewhere. The coyote might be nervous about using the major location because he still wants to get from somewhere to somewhere, so you need to expand your vision on how the coyote will move around this major location and still be somewhat on a travel way to get where he wants to go. These minor locations is hard to put into words because every location setup is different. There are so many different terrains, crops, swamps, roads, fence lines, and amount of game trails. To understand this shift, it is not that hard to see if you think about how you would try to bypass a dangerous area yourself. An example is a field with a road running down the middle of it. Let's say you catch a few coyotes on this location and it goes dead. A few things could have happened. One, you caught all the coyotes in the area. Two, the local coyotes bounced to many miles away and no longer present. Three, no coyotes have needed to use this location since your last catch. Four, the coyotes in the area are on guard and skirting the catch area on the road. I found that most of the time the coyotes are still using the travel way but are skirting the catch area. In our example with the road crossing the field, just look from the catch area and envision how coyote would skirt that section of the road. The coyote may be running on the edge of the field to get around the burn circles. He may be using a dip, a draw, a weed strip inside the wood edge or game trail to get around the danger area. Most of the time, the new shift location will be more cover orientated. If you cannot find any sign or tracks on what you think would be the shift location, then move up or down the travel way until a sign is found. Now, when I'm looking around at sets and I'm going to be somewhere for a while, I go ahead and set those up. Because I don't want to have to guess when this starts now. So I set them up to begin with. By looking for and finding shift locations, you can still take coyotes off the travel way. The other option is to wait the coyotes, and in time they will start to use the major location again. This could be a couple of days to several weeks. The best option is to set up the major locations and the shift type locations in the beginning. This is why, as the coyote change to the shift locations, you're already set up for them. As you set these minor locations up, remember that coyotes will be more hesitant to work an unnatural set. They're already kind of nervous because that's the reason they're skirting somewhere to begin with. Natural is best. You will need to change set type and scent. Snares and blind sets are the best option, so the coyote has less of a chance to refuse your set. There's a learning curve that never seems to end as you start to look for and outguess a coyote on his choice of shift locations. I suggest looking for sign and setting up the minor locations and travel ways as a major location starts to slack off. The more you look for sign and locations, the more proficient you will be at recognizing them. Those two things, guys, of understanding that we are not as smart as we think we are as trappers, even though a lot of trappers seem to think they know everything. And when I meet those trappers, I know they don't know very much. When we see patterns, you have to be big enough, adult enough, rational enough to question what it is that you believe and why. I mean, I've met trappers that'll go to the death mat on if a coyote is right-footed or left-footed. If wearing gloves is so important, that if you pee within 50 feet of the set's dead. If you catch a coon or a possum, you're not going to catch a coyote. You got to rewash a trap and redip it after every catch. And if you set more than a couple of traps on a farm, then you're going to scare all the coyotes off of it, as if all those coyotes are going to come in contact with all those sets that are set, because the trapper is so good at picking locations that he knows where every single coyote's going to be every day. Now, the way I just said that last part's being kind of smart aleck, and that's on purpose. You are never going to finish learning about coyotes. Never. The sad part of the trapping game is, by the time you probably figure out 10% of real trapping knowledge, you're going to be 70 or 80 years old. And if you ever get around older trappers that have trapped for a long time, unless they're just boneheads about how smart they are or how smart they think they are, you will see a childlike fascination with what they're doing. They observe everything. Younger trappers just bang and run. Older trappers have been around a while, observe everything. I had a guy one time tell me that today was going to be a good catch. I go, why do you think that? He's older. He goes, look at all the cows. They're standing up. Dogs are running in the field. The horses are out playing. Animals are moving. Humidity's right. Temperature's right. We're going to have a good day. And by God, we did. See, that's a simple pattern that a country guy figured out. He also told me that if days that all the cows are laying down and the horses are not doing anything and all the dogs are on the porch, it's not going to be that good of a fishing day either. See, that's a pattern. Okay, so what's a trapper do in that situation? Checks his traps, sets more traps. But you have to be able to visualize how a coyote, and you're going to be wrong most of the time, and guys, that's okay. You need to try to play the game of visualizing what a coyote's going to do. The more night footage, the more trail cams you use, the better you're going to get at this. Or if you live in an area where it's very muddy or snowy and you actually take the time to go look, the better you're going to get at this. See, one thing that I've learned in mud, that if you're in a big open field, and I learned this in Missouri, down towards the Mississippi River at the bottom of Missouri, when you catch a coyote in a set, like on a regular location, and the wind is blowing, let's say you set the trap in the middle of the road and the wind's blowing to the north. When that coyote gets caught and he starts thrashing around, making noise, lots of pooping, lots of peeing, and other coyotes hear this or see this disturbance, how are they going to contact that coyote? Are they just going to wander down the road like nothing's going on? Like people in New York do when people are getting mugged and raped? No. They got more sense than those people. They get upwind. And they do this pattern. And if you've ever talked to people that have dogs that do drugs and try to find people and explosives and stuff like this, you'll see what the dogs do. And they will start, as soon as they get a scent of something, they will start this long arcing pattern back and forth. And as soon, and in this arcing pattern, because the farther away you get from something, the farther the smell's going to be dispersed, if you follow what I'm saying. So when they hit a scent, they start going left or right till they run out of that scent. Then they'll kind of come forward and they'll go the opposite direction till they run out of that scent. And then they'll come back in the scent and they'll go the opposite direction. So it's kind of like you're making a triangle towards whatever the scent is. In our case, it's going to be a coyote in a trap. Or a coyote that's not in a trap and it's just bait and lure. And as they get closer to that coyote that's in the trap, they're going to be more lined up directly in the wind. Now, when they're 200 yards out, they may be 200 yards in each direction. But as they get closer to the coyote, they've got to come in to stay in that scent cone of scent of that coyote that's struggling in that trap. Plus, they're looking at it. And they're trying to figure this out. Is this danger? Do I need to kill the coyote? Do I need to eat the coyote? Do I need to help the coyote? Do I need to, you know, make fun of the coyote? I don't know what the coyote's thinking. But as they get closer to the coyote, they get more lined up directly upwind. Because of that, when I'm trapping in places, it's got consistent wind and there's more open ground. If the wind's blowing north and I can walk 15, 20 feet north and there's still open ground behind them for them to go back and forth going through this scent cone, I will put a flat set in where as they're coming back and forth in that scent cone and they're getting more directly in line with the wind, I can put a very simple, subtle flat set in with a trap away from whatever they're smelling. And as they're coming back and forth, it's real easy for them to go, what is that? What is that? What is that? What is that? What's that coyote doing? What's it? What is this? And they're right on top of your flat set. Now, where we ran in Missouri, they completely tilled those fields. There was lots of rain and there was lots of mud. You could see these tracks. And after a couple of times of watching this, I started putting these sets in. Lo and behold, I started catching coyotes on something that made no logical sense based off location. It was based off of what the coyotes were doing. They were treating the coyote in the trap just like a drug dog would do when he's in the zone of trying to figure out and pinpoint where the drugs are at. Starts wide, as he gets closer, he starts narrowing in on that triangle. It's like an upside down triangle. And I'm trying to pick 20, 30 feet where I'm directly behind that with a subtle set. The cool thing is that set that's out there in the middle of nowhere doesn't really get any activity until something gets caught in the first set. But it's a way to pick up doubles when there is something caught in there. So see, that's a pattern that's not based off of any type of location per se of what we as trappers are gonna think are the best coyote locations. But it's a way to catch coyotes off of patterns. And the patterns that if you'll notice, when you start catching coyotes, they will still use a general travel way, but they will bypass. And when we talk about the shift, that's what I'm talking about. They will bypass that, get back on that travel way, and go about their business. Now, there's a couple of ways to handle that. You can go off to the sides, like I like doing, or you can move the trap up or down that trail, say 100 yards, and start contacting coyotes again. But when they get anywhere close to that and they're already skirting it, they're going to be on guard, like pure red alert. So if you can figure out how they're getting around those, it's going to take some legwork, and you start putting in blind sets or snares if they're legal in your area, dude, magic starts happening. The other thing that's a magic for me was I didn't get overly concerned, and I didn't treat any type of location any more important than any other location. That's why I only set one trap per location. I set a crap ton of locations. Putting two at every one is ridiculous. And you don't have enough time or energy. So whatever you make can, you know, like if something was so hot when you get there and there's 15 tracks going each direction and there's scat and kickbacks, I may put in two sets there, but it's going to take that kind of sign. But I'm just going to put one set 99% of the time. But that little trail that's down from there, it's getting a set. The corner of an edge of a field where it comes out in there and coyotes are going to skirt that, I'm going to put a set. The next road down, I'm going to put a set. The rock wall that's down from that, I'm going to put a set. And the average of where the coyotes come from will blow your mind if your bias is it's that one major location. Catching coyotes per square mile. How many can you catch in a square mile is extremely different than how to catch them over 300 miles. And like we've said before, most people that trap in America today do not have the land or the access to do what the guys did back in the 70s out west when it was basically free range. So if you're in the situation, like 90% of trappers probably are, use a system that best applies to you where you're at. And that's probably not going to be the old style of long lining where you set two or three traps on a piece of ground and you drive 20 miles and repeat that all day long. So to catch those coyotes on there, that's where this location thing becomes so important. A minor location is just as important as a major location. And if you'll do this over a season, you will really start to question how much the trapping industry actually knows about how coyotes travel. You can go online and look up coyote travel studies from the USDA. Just get on Google, type it in. Nebraska University, APHIS, and look and read those studies. If trappers had the correct idea of what locations were as a majority, it would look more like an interstate system. They're coming down this road. They go over here. They go down that road. They go over there. They follow this edge. They go over there. So in, say, like 500 acres, you may have 10 roads if you're going to look at it like an interstate system. But when you look at these studies, it looks like a tight web of a spider web. Very few places get more travel than somewhere else. But we as trappers have been trained to try to set it up for an interstate system that does not exist in the coyote's world. That's what I want you to get you to think about. Be smart about what you're doing. Do not let your biases confuse you or stop you from becoming a better trapper. Let the coyotes themselves be your teacher. And in order for that to happen, guys, you've got to open your mind and your ears and see what's going on. That's when stuff starts happening for trappers. And that's also the reason why most trappers have been stuck in a rut for 10 years. Because their system has got a limit. The system of the coyotes being the teacher, there is no limit. The only limit is the amount of coyotes and how quick you can see the patterns and adjust to the patterns. So keep that in mind as you're thinking about scouting this summer for coyotes. Don't just get excited because there's two roads that cross. Get just as excited about that deer trail that's 25 feet down from that ridge that's going from one side of a ridge to another. That's just as important as that road crossing. Do that, and I think you're going to be very happy what happens when you go to check your traps. All right, guys, I'll talk to y'all later.